Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 195, exploring psychological entrepreneurship with Dr. Colleen Long. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
I really started to get a lot of inspiration from the APA conferences. I started going to those at an early point in my career in graduate school and saw all these different psychologists really doing some interesting things in psychology that weren't necessarily related to what you would consider traditional psychotherapy.
That was the voice of my guest, Dr. Colleen Long. Colleen Long, PsyD, was trained as a clinical psychologist, but quickly learned her path would not be a traditional one. She started to recognize the burgeoning number of professionals in the psychology/psychiatry industry being interviewed for their expertise on major news outlets such as CNN, Fox, and ABC's Good Morning America. So she decided there needed to be a place where these media outlets could go to find psychological experts for their interviews. That led her to create Freud TV. And Freud TV is not her only entrepreneurial endeavor. She's also started her own coaching practice and a third-party reproduction agency to match infertile couples up with egg donors. Dr. Long says that she's constantly looking for creative ways for psychologists to apply their skill set to other fields. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Colleen Long, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. A couple of years ago, I became aware of the fact that there were far more psychology PhDs being turned out than there would be jobs for them in academia. And I recall this being of some concern in the APA, that is the American Psychological Association. And there was a sense that future psychologists would need to be entrepreneurial and figure out new sorts of livelihoods using their psychological knowledge. So I discovered you, and I'm interested in talking to you as someone who might be representative of that trend.
Yeah. I think I kind of started off with the same line of thinking when I started to hit internship year and realized that there were about half as many spots as there were applicants.
Boy. And when was that, if I may ask? How long ago did you get
that your degree? That was 2006.
Okay, so you're a relatively new PhD, and you're definitely then on the hooks, on the horns of that dilemma that I was describing, although it sounds like you reacted very proactively. Now, if I recall correctly, we discovered one another through Twitter, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I think you started following me. Was that because you'd listened to Shrink Wrap Radio, or did you find out about me some other way?
No, it was simply the title was just intriguing, the Shrink Wrap Radio. And I thought, well, I know that that has to have something to do with psychology. I wasn't really sure what it was or if it was, a blog. And so I think I just typed it into Google. And that's when I kind of stumbled upon it. And it just looked like an amazing site.
Well, thank you. And so I checked out your website that was listed on your Twitter page and ended up clicking to follow you and became fascinated by one of your several entrepreneurial efforts, which you call Freud TV. But before we get into the specifics of Freud TV and your other ventures, maybe you can tell us a bit more about your educational background. What drew you to psychology, where you went to school, all of that good stuff.
Okay. I started off wanting to go into psychiatry, actually, and I was a pre-med student all throughout college. And ended up right towards the last year. I got all the way to the part where I'd taken the MCATs and had applied to medical schools and actually had gone through with interviews. And I read a book, and now you know what? The name is failing me what the book was called, but it was about a psychiatrist in residency. And I just immediately knew that psychiatry was not what I wanted to do, that it was psychotherapy that I wanted to do. I wanted to do more of the therapy aspect versus the medication aspect. So I switched paths rather quickly and I graduated from Indiana University undergrad and went to Spalding University for graduate school. And you have the option of doing a 5, 6, or 7 year program. And I did the 6 year just because I felt like that's probably a good pace. And I was told that you could, you know, still kind of have a life outside of school as well. So that's where I graduated from with a PsyD.
Well, it's interesting that I wish you could remember the title of that book. It'll probably come to you at some point. I wonder if the author wrote it intending to discourage people from psychiatry or if that was just an unfortunate byproduct for him.
You know, I'm not sure. And, you know, it's funny now that I think back to it because that was, probably 8 or 9 years ago when I read that. And my predoctoral residency was at a psychiatric institute. And that was one of the things that I said, I never want to do that. I never want to be in a place like that, you know. And that's where I ended up and had one of the best experiences of my career so far.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you were lucky at any rate to get clarity on what you wanted to do early on.
Right, at an early stage.
Yeah, before you wasted too much time, too much money, and too much of your life. And so it was really the desire to be a therapist that drew you towards psychology in the first place. Was that right?
Yeah, I really enjoyed speaking with people. I enjoyed trying to put myself into their shoes and understand their life from their perspective. And it just seemed like, you know, the idea that you would actually get paid to do what seemed to come very naturally to me was just kind of, a marriage of both worlds. You know, I just thought, well, this is definitely, it seemed like a calling at that point. And I still feel like that, even now after having done it for so many years throughout graduate school and so many different settings, it's just one of those things that you never really get tired of. And it's always changing. I mean, there's always challenges and you're always learning.
Sure. Now, are you also continuing to do some work as a therapist, even with the, you know, at the same time that you're doing these entrepreneurial efforts, or has the entrepreneurism kind of taken over?
Well, I stopped my predoctoral residency in June of last year. And then that I had pretty much gone straight through graduate school. So I was ready to take a break. I had, you know, hadn't done anything outside of work and go to graduate school for 6 years. So I did some traveling over in Europe and just kind of took a couple months off. And then that's when I really started to kick these companies into gear and really think about what I wanted to do with them. And have delayed the postdoc. I have taken the ECCP, and that's over with. But I
don't know what the ECCP is. I must confess.
Okay, that's the national exam. So that's okay. The exam that you have to pass. I think it's like 75% proficiency to be able to get your license.
Fortunately, I got licensed before that came in, so I got grandfathered in.
you got lucky on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I still have to do the 1,500 postdoc hours, and I'm considering maybe doing some assessment to get licensure. But, of course, with a lot of these ventures that you do, you don't necessarily have to be licensed to do them, especially when you're just using your skill set to create something versus practice therapy.
Well, what caused you to veer off the beaten path, so to speak? What, you know, how did you get these entrepreneurial ideas?
You know, I really started to get a lot of inspiration from the APA conferences. I started going to those at an early point in my career in graduate school and saw all these different psychologists really doing some interesting things in psychology that weren't necessarily related to what you would consider traditional psychology. psychotherapy. So there were two psychologists that I remember, they wrote the book in the wake of 911. And their whole practice was devoted to explaining the politics behind 9/11, sorry, from a psychological perspective. So I think that was really the first time that I started to, you know, the light bulb moment where you go, huh, what else can I do in this field? What else can I do with these skills? And then, you know, you see other people that are speaking on CNN or NBC, and they're talking about global warming, or they're talking about these natural disasters, and their background is in psychology. And I thought, you can do anything with this degree. You just basically have to pick an area that, you know, kind of rings true to you, and then it really kind of blossoms from there. So I think that was probably my first inkling that I wanted to do it. And then also just reading Entrepreneur Magazine, Inc. Magazine, reading stories and thinking, you know what, I think I could do this. I think I could do it if I put my mind to it.
Fascinating. Well, what kinds of ideas did you come up with?
Well, they say necessity is the mother of all invention. And I think that was certainly true in my case, because I wanted to be a media psychologist. I'd had a pretty extensive background in theater before I'd even gone into graduate school.
Aha, that rings true.
Yeah.
with what I see on your website and so on. Go on, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, so I had a huge background in theater, and I thought it would be amazing to be able to be a media psychologist. So to be the psychologist, you know, the resident psychologist on Good Morning America or the Today Show or CNN, and be the go-to person that they say, why are these people doing what they're doing? You know, why is this person acting this way? And I thought that would be just the ultimate. If I had to outline a dream job for me, that would be what it would be. And so I started looking around for kind of what would be like a talent agency for psychologists. You know, how do the Dr. Ludwigs and Dr. Bermans of the world get on these programs?
Yeah.
And so the more and more I started looking into it, there wasn't anything in existence. And really what these psychologists have been doing is almost forging a path for themselves, which I, in my opinion, is the hard way. So that's where the idea for Freud TV came about, because I thought, well, I'll create an agency. If that's not out there, I recognize the need that there is going to eventually come a point where the media says, where do we go to find these psychologists? I don't want to Google, you know, for 3 hours today trying to find a psychologist that specializes in eating disorders. Where can I go just to find what I need? And that's where Freud TV was created.
Well, what an interesting idea, because I haven't had time to spend a lot of time on the Freud TV site, but I'm really intrigued to see. You send out a daily, looks like a daily update from Freud TV.
The evening cigar.
Yeah, and at first I didn't get that, the evening cigar, and then, oh, it's Freud.
Right.
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. So I thought, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
But I see you have a good flow of opportunities already, that various journalists and bloggers and so on are posting their needs, that they're looking for an expert in such and such an area for a story that they're hoping to develop. So it seems like there is a flow of demand. How long have you been doing this, by the way?
Actually, I've only been doing it for 2 months, and our membership has been really growing at a good pace. We've been getting about 3 to 5 new members a week. And the media, I think probably there's a tight circle of media people, and word spreads quickly. And so that's the reason why we're starting to get more and more queries for psychologists. And you know, it's an easy place for journalists to go. They don't have to pay any money to look for a psychologist. It's an easy search program. And usually they find a psychologist within an hour or two of making the query.
Wow, that's really great. Now, you say we. Is that the royal we, or are there other people involved in this venture with you?
You know what? I I have the weird and strange habit of saying we all the time when I mean me. I am the only person that is running Freud TV. I think probably we developed out of just a sense of needing to present a huge or a bigger company than what it is, but it's actually little old me behind the curtain right now.
I know what you're talking about. I do a market research company, and I even have people listed on there who are, in fact, people that I know, but mm-hmm. really it's just me.
Right. Well, and, you know, the more I actually talk to our clients and I say, you know, it's just me. You're probably going to get me every time you call. And they don't seem to mind, you know, as long as they're getting what they signed up for, it's all good.
Yeah. Well, you must be pretty sharp in Web 2.0 technologies and so on to put this together. It seems like there's a fair amount of sophistication in what you're doing. I see interviews on the site. It looks like you're doing live TV mm-hmm. interviews. How do you come by all this expertise?
Well, I don't. I do not have any expertise when it comes to technology, web development. I had to really learn the hard way when it came to hiring the right people to develop this website. And this website that you see now is the product of about a year's work of going through four different developers mm-hmm. Because I had hired someone from overseas to do it and realized very quickly that that was not going to work because, one, we are on completely different time zones. So communication was a big problem. And then just communication, just the language barriers were a problem. And when you're dealing with technology and someone like me that is very not learned in technology, it makes it even harder when there are language barriers. So that was a huge mistake. And then I ended up finding someone that was absolutely great. And there are actually website templates out there, which I would have killed to know this information a year ago, where you can actually just plug in your information into these templates and they're already pre-programmed.
I've heard of such things and I couldn't get them to work for me. And I certainly know what you're talking about, though, about foreign programmers, because, again, for my market research business, there's some software that's really critical to my business. And mm-hmm. the programmer is in France. And he speaks some English, and I speak no French. And but I'm very dependent on him. And so mm-hmm. it's an interesting world that we live in here. Now, we talked about the benefits of Freud TV for people who are in the publishing business, you know, who are looking for expert sources. But it also is potentially of substantial benefit to people who want to position themselves as experts in the field of psychology or coaching or psychotherapy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's really, that's our target market is what we try to do is I'll try to find psychologists websites out there that maybe their websites are really great, but there's no connection there to the media that they're trying to reach. And chances are they're not going to be able to reach the media through a simple website because, you know, as you know, there's millions and millions of websites out there and probably thousands of therapist websites. So what we do is offer them the ability to build their online press profile. And this is just really, it's at its most basic level, like Facebook. It's just like Facebook, except it's just for psychologists and psychiatrists. So you build your profile, and this is called your press profile. And from there, they're able to stream videos of their work in the media. They're able to hold and attend webinars. They're able to post articles. They can type in all of their specialties, and then that's how the media searches for them. But, you know, you can see how it makes it easier when the media person has one name, Freud TV, that's synonymous with psychologists and psychiatrists, that they go in and they say, okay, I need someone that specializes in PTSD. They type that in. They've got 14 different profiles that show up, and they're able to quickly go through each person's profile and see the relevant material versus having to search for it over, you know, a period of hours on the internet.
I think it's absolutely brilliant, and I wish it had been around when, oh, it's probably been 5 or 6 years now since a book that I collaborated on, And I didn't have a chance to, I was too busy, you know, to go on a book tour, and my co-author didn't want to go on a book tour. And so we really missed a huge opportunity in terms of, you know, of getting a lot of interviews and a lot of interest for the book. And
right.
This would have been really valuable at that time.
Yeah, and that's what I try to encourage our clients is I'll say, if you have any articles that you're coming out with or you have any books that you're coming out with, let us know, because we put that on the featured articles section of the site, and that's the front page. So as soon as the media goes there, they see a column of psychologists on the right that are writing about, you know, right now we've got trying to think who's on there right now. We've got Stephen Balzac that talks about different aspects of IO psychology and corporate psychology. And we've got a couple other people that talk about, we've got Kathy Greenberg on there, and she's the author of What Happy Women Know.
Oh, yes, I interviewed her just recently.
Yeah, yeah. And so she was able to join, and she submitted an article about circling the career track as a woman. And then we've got some other really interesting people on there. Paul Scheinberg, who's a sports psychologist, writes some things that are really interesting related to cognitive distortions and athletic performance. So, you know, it's just, it's really turned into this great thing where, people are able to showcase their talents, and it really shows how diverse and broad the field is.
And I guess, you know, so far I haven't been in a position where I've had to scratch my head and say, I wonder who I could get as a guest. I wonder who I could invite as a guest for one of my two podcast series with psychologists. Because so far I haven't run out of ideas. But if that but if that day ever comes, this could be a good resource for me. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned a sports psychologist, and I have yet to interview somebody who I feel like is really solid in that area. So I might consult your site for that.
Well, yeah, and I think Dr. Scheinberg is actually, he's worked with a lot of the Olympic athletes. So he's definitely an expert in that field.
Well, this seems like just a really brilliant idea. Now, you know, and I know that I have listeners who are in graduate school right now, as well as people who are therapists. Probably some author. Yeah, I know I have some author listeners. I have listeners who are in allied fields of counseling or coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Is your site broadly open to, you know, say people who are coaches rather than, quote, psychotherapists?
Yeah, we, you know, at first when I started it, I thought, you know, I'm going to make something that's just for psychologists because, you know, there was never anything that was just for psychologists when I was in graduate school. It was always, you know, we were kind of the redheaded stepchild to psychiatrist, and kind of I thought, well, I'll make something just for us, you know, and kind of like a no psychiatrist allowed thing. And then I thought, you know, I thought, well, that's silly because there are a lot of psychiatrists out there that have a lot of great things to offer as well. And there's a lot of people that aren't psychologists or psychiatrists that have expertise in certain fields. And Stephen Balzac is a good example on our site. He's not a psychologist, but he is very adept in the field of corporate consulting and executive coaching. And so I thought, you know, why limit the site to one particular field when we've got a lot of people out there that actually do have a lot of expertise to offer? And, you know, it's the media, whether or not they want to actually have someone that actually has the title doctor, or if that's not that important to them. My goal is just to help people be able to get them their names out there.
Okay, well, tell us about, now I know this isn't your only entrepreneurial effort, so what are some of the other things that you have going?
Well, I run a coaching practice where I help entrepreneurs who are stuck in a rut or coming up against obstacles. And I really try to use my knowledge base to try to help them figure out maybe some of the personal themes that keep on coming up. And, you know, well, you keep on saying that you're wanting to talk to more consumers, but yet there's some fear behind that. And your fear tends to crop up a lot around these times. And what do you think that's about? And so kind of really helping them figure out what kind of characteristics are maybe coming up in their way as they try this entrepreneurship thing out? And I'm in a mastermind group, which has really been a great thing because I'm the only person that kind of comes with it with my stance or viewpoint. Everyone else, we've got a copywriter and a marketer. We've got a tech guy, PR people. And so we all get together once a week and we just kind of brainstorm and we help each other out and everyone has their own businesses. And so they say, well, why isn't this working? And then we go and we start to try to think about it. And it's been really great. And I really enjoy this aspect of coaching. My passion is creating new businesses and watching them grow. And so if I can help someone else and use what I've learned in school, it's kind of like the best of both worlds. So that's one thing that I'm doing. And then the second thing I've got is aesthetic genetics. And aesthetic genetics is a third-party reproduction agency. So what that is an agency that helps couples who are struggling with infertility. So we might have a couple that's unable to carry a pregnancy full term, or maybe someone that's just unable to conceive on their own. And we house a database of donors and surrogates. And then the parents would come and pick out who they would want to be the egg donor, who they would want to be their surrogate, depending on their particular issue. Now, that's not anything new. That's been around for a while. Our concept is different in that I take a behavioral approach and we focus more on the psychological issues that are related to infertility.
Now, this is the royal we again. This is you?
Yeah, this is me. Sorry about that.
Just checking.
I don't think the we's ever going to go away.
Okay.
So it looks at different aspects of infertility. And right now the research shows that about 30% of infertility can be linked to stress alone. So if we can kind of work with that stress and help them figure out what it is that might be maintaining the stress in their life. Obviously, they're stressed out about being infertile, but what can they do to cope with that? And I guess we in this sense also means psychologists, because I do refer them to psychologists that are actually licensed to practice so that to work with them. And of course, it would be a conflict of interest if I were to work with them and also own the company that gets profits on the parent. So I basically am kind of a referral source. I give them the legal referrals and the IVF referrals and the psychological referrals. And that's what we do.
Well, that seems like a far cry from Freud TV. How did you get this idea?
Well, I had done egg donation while I was in graduate school, and that's how I paid for graduate school. And I just really thought all the couples that I worked with and all the couples that I met, it was just an amazing sect of people that really, truly just wanted to have a family like everyone else and just either had waited long or just were unable to. And so, you start to become attached to these people when you meet with them and hear their stories. And there was just nothing that I could see wrong or bad about starting this new agency myself. And I thought, if we could really help these people with the psychological issues, I think that that's a missing component. And, right now, the only place that really focuses on the psychological component is the Boston IVF. And they are, relatively ahead of the curve when it comes to third-party reproduction agencies. So, it just all came from personal experience. And I had a good mentor that said, this is a relatively simple business model. This is something that you could start on your own if you really wanted to put the work into doing it. And so I said, okay.
Well, how do people find you?
Aesthetic Genetics is all one word, aestheticgenetics.com. And we have this database, and we whenever a parent contacts us and says we would be interested in looking at it, we screen them and make sure that they are, in fact, potential parents that are going through this process. And then we give them access to this database where they are able to look through various girls that are, a lot of the girls are going to Ivy League schools and, you know, they've got the 4.0 and, you know, various characteristics. Some parents are really looking for Asian women, and some parents are looking for Native American women. And so it's just kind of what they need. A lot of people need people with successful previous donations.
So what are you doing, running ads at those schools for young women who would like to make money as donors?
Yes. So I work with a an advertising company that just does, I believe it's called on-campus advertising, and that's all they do. So you'll say, I want to reach this market, this demographic of Ivy League students. And they'll say, okay, so Harvard has 15,000 students, and they're the Crimson, I forget what the name of the paper is called, is in circulation among 8,000 people. And so Crimson Tide, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and then you get the statistics, and then so you'll say, okay, I want posters run at Harvard, and I want papers run at Stanford, and let's do posters and papers at University of Pennsylvania. And so you just kind of pick and choose, and then you get a lot of girls that apply, and there's a very small percentage that you are able to take.
How interesting. I'm really surprised to hear that you were able to put yourself through graduate school as a donor.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea that sort of financial opportunity was out there that you could, you know, make enough to do. I wonder why more people don't do that.
Well, you know, I think that more people do that. It's just not, it's not spoken of right now. I think it's kind of still that taboo thing in society. And a lot of times, the parents don't want people to necessarily know that they've gone through an egg donor or a surrogate, because they want, you know, a lot of times they want a girl that looks like them, so that there is not a question. Mm-hmm. So there is this kind of secret world that exists where people don't talk about it. The donors don't talk about it. But I think it's happening quite a bit. And there are a lot of, you know, ethical questions that have been raised now because, you know, there's some women out there that will do this egg donation, you know, 20, 25 times, and they're taking a lot of hormones each time. So, you know, as an agency, I have to be kind of privy to how many times each girl has donated and be able to say, all right, I can't have this girl anymore in our database, or, you know, I think that this person might be, because when you're a struggling student, I think in college and graduate school, money sometimes can weigh out over maybe potential health risks down the road. So yeah, it's a new field, but I think it's not going anywhere.
I'm impressed by the fact, you know, you were talking about working with this advertising agency that could distribute your posters on campuses and so on. That must have required some laying out some money up front. Plus, even mm-hmm. with Freud TV and all, you know, working on getting your website up for a year, did mm-hmm. you have a venture capitalist behind you? You know, it takes some faith to lay money out front, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it definitely does. I think that I didn't have a venture capitalist. Fortunately, through egg donation, I had a pretty good amount of money in savings. And so I was able to use that money to front the cost for the websites and the web developers and the advertising.
Well, what's your advice for other people in the, let's say, in the mental health field who want to be more entrepreneurial, or maybe who have some ideas? What's your advice to them?
You know, my advice to them is I always think of my friend who he was on the Olympic team, the Olympic hockey team, and his coach said, a lot of people want to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal. Not a lot of people want to do the work it requires to win the gold medal.
Right.
You know, and I think that really applies to entrepreneurship, because when you look at it on the outside, it sounds like a sexy idea to everyone. It's, you know, waking up in the morning in your PJs, getting on, maybe typing a couple of emails, and then taking off for the day and laying by the pool as the money comes rolling in. But that's really not the nature, at least from my experience, of running your own business. There are a lot of days where you don't feel like doing it. it's difficult. You know, the best thing about being an entrepreneur is working from home, and the worst thing about being an entrepreneur is working from home.
Amen to that.
Yeah, you know, and it's you go through, at least I've gone through, a lot of self-doubt where I start to question, you know, what on earth are you doing? Why don't you just go through the normal steps like everyone else and do the postdoc and get your license and do your 40 hours a week and collect your paycheck and your secure health benefits. And then there's a part that goes, this is what all entrepreneurs go through. You have to make it through this part to get through to the other side. So I guess my advice to other people that are considering about it is really ask yourself if you are prepared to put in the work that is required to be an entrepreneur. And that means, are you financially prepared? Can you take a year out of your work and still be able to find some means to support yourself? Are you mentally prepared for the rejection that comes with being an entrepreneur on a daily basis sometimes? The self-doubt that comes along with being an entrepreneur and no longer being the expert. You're not going to have the security of a consistent paycheck or sick leave or health insurance benefits. So you have to really ask yourself, is this something I'm willing to work for? Or does it just sound like a good idea?
On the other hand, if you do have what it takes and you pull it through, then you've got something that's totally invaluable, which means that you'll always be able to find your way and make a living, probably no matter what the current economic conditions, because you are truly independent.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the hope.
Yeah. I think that's really a worthy hope.
Yeah.
Because when we're dependent on an external institution, we are just that. We are dependent.
Exactly. Well put.
Yeah. So let's see. What else? I have the impression that you might be a meditator. Is that right?
Yes. What gave you that impression? Was it my calm presence?
No, it was my clear psychic clairvoyance and also something to do with a note that you sent me.
Be sure to mention mindfulness. I do meditate. I've just recently kind of picked it back up again. I did a bunch of spirituality groups when I was in my pre-doctoral residency, and I really started to do these little meditations with my groups, and my focus has always been on positive psychology. So a lot of what Seligman and Jon Kabat-Zinn were finding was that meditation is actually showing these dramatic changes in the left prefrontal cortex that is associated with our feelings of well-being. And I thought, well, it's worth a shot. You know, we can certainly give it a try.
And,
you know, I was seeing these patients that had been on the same medications year after year after year and had been these outpatients of this hospital for years and years and years. And I thought, well, you know, maybe we'll try this. Maybe this will be something different. And I started doing the meditations with them and started to notice a change in myself. I started to notice that I was calmer throughout the day, and little things like brushing my teeth, I was actually in the moment of brushing my teeth and not thinking about what I was going to be doing next, and just kind of more content or more just satisfied, I guess, with daily life in general. And I started to put two and two together and realize, I wonder if there really is something behind this whole meditation. And, you know, I think as life changes, as it does, you forget it and you don't put it in anymore, kind of like exercise, and it kind of goes out the, you know, the back door. And then after a while, you need it again. And so I picked it back up a couple months ago, and really you start to question, why did I ever stop? I guess, again, like exercise, because it just the changes I've noticed in myself and being able to really slow down and be happy that it's just Saturday and I'm going to the movies with my mom, you know, different things like that. I think meditation has a huge influence on.
Yes, yes. Well, as we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to leave our audience with?
You know what? I think we touched on pretty much everything.
Okay, good. Well, I'm certainly going to keep my eye on you because I think you're you're somebody who's going places, and I'm going to be able to say, well, I talked to her way back when, before she built this huge empire.
Yeah.
And became a media mogul.
Yeah. Wayne Enterprises.
Dr. Colleen Long, thanks so much for being my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Colleen Long. You may have noticed I had a pretty bad case of laryngitis during this interview, and I'm not fully over it yet, nearly a week after the interview that you've just heard. Also, if there are any Skype experts out there, I could use a little consulting help. We were both on Skype, but I noticed that when I would speak, there would be a hissing noise under my voice that was absent when she would speak. This is something I experience from time to time in other interviews. I'm not sure if it only happens when we're both on Skype or not. I'll have to watch out for that in the future. I'm always interested in the entrepreneurial directions people strike out in. I guess I have tremendous admiration for those who can figure out how to survive outside of established institutions. This is probably because I've spent so much of my own career within the relative safety of academia, but then discovered that I could also make it in the world of business. Don't get me wrong, I'm extremely grateful for the regular paycheck that my academic life provided over the years, allowing me to raise a family. At the same time, my foray into the business world via market research taught me admiration for those who are brave enough and creative enough to invent their own careers. I found it exciting and energizing, both in my market research and my podcasting careers, to make my own decisions, follow my own instincts, and chart my own course, and see it work. I know that some portion of my audience out there is made up of therapists, counselors, psychologists, self-help authors, coaches, NLP practitioners, hypnotherapists, and so on. And I know you are probably always thinking about how to grow your business, grow your client list, grow your audience. I know I am. If you have psychological expertise that you'd like to be interviewed in the media about, then you'd do well to sign up on Colleen's website at www.freudtv.com. And by the way, I don't get any kickback for this plug. Then on a daily basis, you'll see notices from writers, broadcasters, journalists, bloggers, and so on, who are looking for some particular expertise or another. Do let me know if you follow up on this and how it works out for you.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
I received an email just yesterday from a psychologist in Finland who would like to start a short podcast for his professional association there in the Scandinavian North. He wanted to know how he could record phone interviews for podcasting and any other equipment recommendations I might have. Now, periodically, I receive similar requests about my setup, and sometime back, one person suggested I ought to put something about it on my site. Well, this last request inspired me to do just that. So now, if you look under the About Dr. Dave menu tab on Shrink Wrap Radio, you'll see a pull-down menu item labeled My Podcasting Setup. And on that page, you'll see three lovely photos of my current podcast equipment, along with a description of the software I use and links to the various manufacturers. We have two new additions to our Frapper map. Welcome to Ramon in Bangkok, Thailand, who writes, quotes, "Here and now is where it's all happening." Well spoken, like a true Gestalt or Zen person, Ramon. I agree. Here and now is where the action is. We also see a nice photo clip of Heather Gout there, who says, "Hello, Dr. Dave from the Naked Soul podcast." So if you haven't put yourself on our map yet, please do so at www.frappr.com/shrinkwrapradio. In fact, I had a brainstorm yesterday that it would be fun to somehow capture the many photos from our Frapper map and use Animoto to create an animated musical slideshow to put on the site. I'm not sure those photos are high enough resolution, though, to work out very well, and also I'm not sure there's a way to harvest them very easily. Maybe at some point I'll start begging for photos from you just for that purpose, and then I'll put the Animoto video on the site. I think that would be a lot of fun to see, and perhaps it would enhance the sense of community. What do you think? Speaking of Frapper and things that go let me remind you that I'm on Twitter, and you can follow my tweets at twitter.com/shrinkwrapradio. There's no www in front. Once again, this show can also be found on the promednetwork.com website, and selected episodes appear on sciencepodcasters.org as well. Now, this is Shrink Wrap Radio number 195, which means that number 200 is just around the corner. Please send audio congratulations that I can play on the show using my voicemail on Skype or my Chingo or our phone at 206-337-0622 or by sending an MP3 file via email. I've already got about two or three at this point, but would really like a lot more. I'm just greedy, I guess. So send them along, and I'll play them on the upcoming show. Remember, Shrink Wrap Radio is supported by your kind donations and your patronage of our sponsors using the discount links on our site for GoDaddy, PetMeds.com, Brookstone, and Budget Car Rentals. You'll find a big green donate button on our site along with links to our sponsors.
Hi, this is Andy Hunt of Practical Wellbeing. We're all on the couch with Dr. Dave, so let's snuggle up and, hey, mind those elbows.
Hey, Andy, thanks so much for that transition and for helping to support Shrink Wrap Radio. Be sure to check out Andy's Practical Wellbeing blog at practicalwellbeing.co.uk. Now let's see what we have in our mailbag. First, we hear from Sydney, Australia. Hi, Dr. Dave. Congratulations on your upcoming 200th show. Quite a milestone for both yourself and your devoted listeners. A great measure of success in any endeavor is longevity. The number 200 is a sure indicator on the success of your wonderful and interesting podcasts. Keep them coming, Dr. Dave. I've only just changed from using PC to Macs and heard on your podcast that you like and use Macs. I've been given a MacBook, the new aluminum one, and have to admit that I'm loving the difference. A user-friendly paradise compared to my old Dell laptop, still learning to use it to its best advantage for me. May the next 200 podcasts be as interesting as the last. I wish you loads of fun and exciting interviews. Kindest regards, Margaret in Sydney, Australia. And she adds a P.S. Have emailed before. I'm the registered nurse with crazy interests in psychology, spirituality, Bodron drumming, and Reiki. And yes, Margaret, I remember you. And oh, I'm so jealous of your new MacBook, the aluminum one. And I also got a follow-up email from Margaret telling me a bit more about her use of the Macintosh and how happy she is with it and sort of more encouragement about the 200th and saying that she'll listen to the next 200, which is great because, yes, I'm in it for the longevity as well. By the way, let me say to all my Australian listeners how sorry I've been to hear about the terrible fires in the Melbourne area. A couple of listeners have sent me links to photos, and the destruction was absolutely appalling. I can't help but wonder if the extreme heat you've been experiencing there is yet another manifestation of global warming. Here we've been experiencing a fair amount of drought, although it is raining at this particular moment, but the rainfall is way behind where it's supposed to be. Bob Dylan's words never rang more true. The times, they are a-changin'. The next one reads, "Hello, David. Thank you for your reply. Unfortunately, I don't have iTunes." Oh, let's see. This is from Jurian in the Netherlands, and we've heard from him before. He says, "Unfortunately, I don't have iTunes." Well, that's kind of more to me. I won't take you through that part. He says, "I also registered on the map link that you gave me." I think he's talking about Frapper. "Thank you for your kind words concerning my English. If I may ask, at what point in your life did you decide to become a psychologist? In my life, it was at a certain point where it suddenly came upon me. Here in the schools, they give job examples you might like after you've passed your tests, but there isn't psychology in any of those tests. Did something happen in your life where you wanted to take a new direction towards psychology, like me, or have you always wanted to do psychology? Sorry if this might sound rude. Cheers, Jurian." Well, Jurian, it's not rude at all. And actually, probably, I think there's some earlier podcasts where I actually talk about my career progress and all, somewhere in the first 10 podcasts or so. And no, I didn't always know I was going to be a psychologist. I think initially I wanted to be a writer. I imagined myself being a writer because I wanted to talk about the core issues of what it is to be human. And I imagined myself as a very deep, pipe-smoking, black turtleneck sweater, bearded writer. And tied with that was my interest in technology, and I really thought I would become an electrical engineer and was initially accepted into university in engineering. And then I switched out into creative writing to follow that other ambition. And then I realized as I got close to graduation that I could starve to death very quickly as a writer, as a young writer, and that I needed to have a profession. And when I heard about psychology, it just seemed like it shared a lot in common with the same thing, the same sort of impulse that I had to be a writer. It seemed like it was both a profession, being a therapist, and one that would get me involved, as I say, with the brass tacks of existence. So that's how I made it into psychology. And hope that answers your question. And next we hear from Joyce in Georgia. She writes, "Dear Dr. Dave, I've been a longtime podcast downloader of your Shrink Wrap radio show and have learned a lot thanks to you. I teach AP psychology," that's advanced placement. "I teach AP psychology at a local high school in Marietta, Georgia, so your information is always relevant to my work. I often don't listen to your downloaded podcasts for several weeks due to time constraints, so it's been only recently that I heard your appeal for donations. I would feel terribly guilty not doing my part to help, knowing how much you have given me. I just donated $25, but wish it could be more. I'd hate to see your podcast disappear. Joyce." Joyce, thank you so much for taking time to write. I'm glad the podcast has been of value to you in your teaching. Thank you so much for your donation. Hopefully it will inspire others to follow suit. And the next one reads, "Hello, Dr. Dave. I'm from Israel, and I like very much your program. I listen to many of your interviews on Shrink Wrap Radio, and it's very good. I want to ask you if there is an interview about Tourette's syndrome and OCD, is research about it, and can it have a cure in the future? Thank you very much for your help." And that's from Yael. And no, I have not done a show on Tourette's, and I don't even remember if I've really done a show on OCD either. So that's a great suggestion, Yael. I'll try to follow up on it at some point. And one of my biggest regrets as a therapist, when I was a very young therapist, some people that I knew referred their son to me for work with hypnosis, and I didn't. He had tics. I would say a variety of tics and grunts and groans and sort of sounds and twitches that he made. And at that point in time, I wasn't sufficiently aware of Tourette's to have diagnosed it as Tourette's, and the hypnosis was not terribly effective. And I've always regretted that I didn't know more than I did at the time, although, you know, I'm not sure what I could have done other than to make sure that they understood that it was Tourette's and maybe to seek out, you know, some other form of help. I think there may be some medications these days that can help, but I'm not absolutely sure about that. I'm really not up to date on that still. Next, we have another one from Israel, from longtime listener Cody, who wrote, "Hi, Dave. I would like to send you my updated congratulation card for your 200th podcast. I hope you like it." And she sent me a JPEG graphic. Very nice. I'm going to post it on the site when the 200th comes. She says, "Thank you so much for your wonderful podcast. Please drop a note that you got it." I did drop a note, and here I am again saying, "I got it." She signs, "Take care, Cody." So I think that better wrap it up for the email for today. I want to thank our sponsor, Budget Car Rentals, for their support of Shrink Wrap Radio. May I suggest that you consider Budget.com for any of your automobile rental needs. Using my special code of SHRINK will get you or your family or friends that you share this information with $30 off weekly rentals or 10% off for other time periods. With Budget, you can rent like a genius. There are over 900 locations in the U.S. alone. FastBreak is the Budget Express rental service featuring paperless transactions, making your rental experience simple and stress-free. Check out Budget.com for details and use the discount code SHRINK, or you can follow the links from the ShrinkWrapRadio.com website. Don't forget, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. In addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, or you're encouraged to leave voice messages using the My Chingo button on the site, or in the U.S., you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Thanks to my guest, Dr. Colleen Long, for her insights into the psychologist as entrepreneur. Next week's show will feature my interview with Dr. Ramon Moncayo on Lacanian psychoanalysis. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.